Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Inclusive Transportation, a Manifesto for Repairing Divided Communities by Veronica O. Davis. Foreword by Tamika L. Butler. Narrated by Tiani Ma. Publisher's note. In this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and ebook formats of the book. Foreword by Tamika L. Butler, Esquire. For decades, Black planners, public health professionals, engineers, and the community stakeholders who we represent have been calling for racial equity in all facets of urban planning, allied fields, and Black life. Prior to 2020, our words and thoughts were greeted with applause, praise, and maybe a mention via social media or an academic citation. In 2020, the uneven impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, the daily stories of racism in shared urban spaces such as bike lanes, parks, and sidewalks, and our common witness of George Floyd's murder in a public street, placed racial equity center stage for urban planning professionals. As the world protested the multiple unjust murders of Black people, the nation's power structure offered appeasements. But was real change on the way? Was real action a possibility? As Veronica O. Davis wrote this book throughout 2022, the pandemic continued and still continues to disproportionately impact Indigenous, Black, and Brown people. Add other identities, and those disparities increase. People living with disabilities, people living in poverty, femme-identified and genderqueer people. The list could go on. The power structures that at first were willing to adapt in order to respond to a deadly, highly transmissible virus, have begun to reassert their prime directives, productivity and profit building. National planning organizations and conferences have returned to organizing events that cater to their predominantly white, male, able-bodied, heterosexual, and privileged leadership and membership. Organizations that continue to tout equity, diversity, and inclusion are still hiring and voting in all-white leadership structures that fail to represent the diverse tapestry that is the backbone of the United States. This book joins the chorus of the many Black professionals who have been asking their peers to engage in new ways of thinking, listening, and governing. Most important, it does so by offering concrete advice that planners and allied professionals can take to assess their own privilege, interrogate power, and actively shift those dynamics in their work. For many of us, 2020 was just another year of injustice. We know that the anti-racist future we believe in has not arrived. This lack of progress is due in part to the lack of action taken by those in positions of power. Too often, those in power with an ability to bring about change cite an inability to know where to begin. I hope those leaders, as well as scholars, students, and anyone interested in justice, listen to this manifesto for repairing divided communities. More than 100 years after the Tulsa Massacre, one of many acts of white annihilation of thriving Black spaces in cities, 3 years after George Floyd's murder, and moments away from the next Black death, Veronica provides a practical, thoughtful, and empathetic step-by-step guide to anyone who cares about people, wants to build just communities, and hopes to serve the world. This book will, can, and should serve as a handbook or manual for people to refer to at every step of a process. With the humor, grace, and realness I have come to love and cherish in my friend, Veronica guides people through how to do transportation planning right. Veronica is a determined, dynamic, daring doer and dreamer. I am also lucky to call her a dear friend, a co-conspirator, a colleague, and a sister. In the years I have learned and grown with Veronica, she has always been a leading voice in what inclusive transportation can do as we seek to repair and redress the harms done to our divided communities. Like all Black women practicing, teaching and learning in different aspects of the planning and urban placemaking worlds, we have shared many conversations about the ways we experience and process shared fears for our families and our futures that were felt long before 2020 when many dare to finally confront the racial inequities built into this country's systems, institutions, and built environment. I feel changed by reading Veronica's book. I hope you feel the same. Get started on or continue your justice journey. And when you finish, make a commitment to do more than just talk about equity. The just future Veronica's child and my children deserve is within reach. Like many leaders, Veronica will play a role in getting us there. You can play a role too, or you can get out of the way. Preface. What do we owe each other? Do we all have duties to society, or do we get to live and let live, adhere to social contracts, or balance the needs of the greater good with our own? To be completely honest, if you are paying attention to the tenor of the discussions around transportation in the United States, it might seem that people who live here are selfish and in a hurry. Perhaps not in all regards, but when it comes to getting from point A to point B, most of us come across as unwilling to endure any minor inconvenience for the country's greater good. There is an unwillingness to abide by rules of the road, which breaks the social contract. People with careers in transportation see this selfishness and hurriedness play out every single day. Traffic engineers install stoplights, and people run them intentionally because, heaven forbid, they should be inconvenienced by having to sit at a red light for 90 seconds. People illegally block crosswalks with their parked cars because they will just be a minute while they run into a building to grab something quickly, instead of pulling over on the side of the road or waiting until the next time they stop, drivers attempt to text while driving. People drive over the speed limit because they need to get to their destination as quickly as possible. These me-first behaviors are often the precursors to crashes that lead to serious injuries and death. How do you plan and design safer roads when you know these attitudes and behaviors exist? I am not anti-car, nor am I part of some secret lobby out to rid the world of cars, or, as some journalists opine, a soldier in the war against cars. However, I do not think it is sustainable to live in an urban or suburban community where driving a car is your only option. And yet I see many people unwilling to acknowledge that car-centric transportation makes other options more dangerous and difficult to implement. When I was in middle school, we played in the middle of the street. If a car came down the street, someone would yell, "Car!" and we would scatter to the side of the road to let the car by. The driver would slow to a crawl just in case a wiggly kid darted into the street. This highlighted a mutual understanding and respect that we were sharing the same space. Fast forward a handful of decades, and children are struck and killed by drivers as they walk to school with friends, ride their bicycles, and even stand waiting at a bus stop. We should all be willing to do whatever it takes to make our transportation system safe for children, one would think. But in my experience, I have seen the opposite. I have had many projects where people were not willing to deal with any inconvenience to make roads safer. Show them data that they will be delayed only 1 minute? Nope. They do not want to be delayed. Try to take away on-street parking? Hell hath no fury like a community that may lose parking. As I think about how we can repair divided communities, I know it will require empathy, compassion, and willingness to accept minor inconveniences for the greater good. And people may even find they can still drive their cars, but life is better when people have options. Adults with disabilities and children can move around safely, and older adults can still visit their friends when driving becomes more difficult. To be completely honest, there is a part of me that worries whether the transportation industry has the ability to change, or even wants to change. The title of the book is about repairing divided communities. How do you change a system that was never designed to be equitable? How do you change the system that divided the communities in the first place? What happens if you try to move it in the opposite direction? What if it is like a pendulum, which moves in the opposite direction, one I would consider progress, but then swings back to where it was, or perhaps farther, resulting in more communities destroyed and lives lost. There are pioneers who are the leaders in designing multi-passenger transportation and bicycle infrastructure. There are believers who look to examples of other countries that have made the commitment and investment to create cities that are walkable and bikeable. But there are still plenty among us who are perfectly fine with destroying a community to widen a highway or a roadway to relieve congestion, who believe that the ends justify the means. They are willing to sacrifice communities, mostly Black, Brown, low-income, or all three, for what they see as the greater good, or for moving other people and goods through the community. That last group still holds power in many state departments of transportation, consultant companies, contracting companies, state capitals, and even Capitol Hill. Consultants and contractors see the dollar signs. Elected officials' campaigns are funded by people with deep pockets, and the officials are in power to ensure companies continue to make money. To be fair to some state departments of transportation, they are beholden to the laws, regulations, and performance metrics created by their state legislature or executive branch, depending on the state, which funnels massive amounts of funding toward car-centric projects. It is a complicated and long-term process to change that structure. It will take patience, even as people are killed needlessly and communities are razed. But the more people there are who understand what must change and who work together to envision a transportation system that actually provides freedom for all and is safe and affordable, the more likely we will be to achieve it. I hope the ideas in the chapters ahead will give you insight and support for the challenges you'll face in your work to shift how people living in the United States think about transportation, and for the planning, design, and implementation of the projects themselves. To be completely honest, this book was harder to write than I expected. Between the time I started my outline and when I completed the final draft, I had a baby, sold the company I co-founded, and became an executive in a very large local government agency. Oh, and there was a global pandemic that upended our lives. As my life changed in profound and unexpected ways, along with our entire world, I found myself struggling to find the right words to articulate my point. Some of the struggle was in finding the balance between nuance and making the book understandable to different people. The other part was in understanding when I was dancing around an issue to avoid saying what needed to be said. I am still learning that self-doubt is a lie that will always trap you where you are. It will make you feel small. Throughout this writing process, I had moments of self-doubt about being the expert. What makes someone an expert? Is there a magical ceremony where one officially becomes an expert? Does writing a book solidify one's expertise? Does someone need a doctorate? Do men ask themselves this question? I remember a conversation with colleagues, whom I call my heart and soul trust, where we questioned who gets to decide who's the authority on a topic. Being Black and a woman in a white and man-dominated industry is enough to create doubt. My parents gave me the lecture most Black parents give their children. You have to be twice as good to even be seen as an equal. It is a lecture that propelled me to work hard in college and earn a double master's degree from an Ivy League school. Because if I have two masters, then no one can say they were given to me. Because what school would give away two masters? I even briefly started a doctoral program so that no one could say I did not deserve it. However, that lecture still sometimes makes me question whether what I am doing is good enough. Is my book twice as good? Good enough to be seen as equal? There were times when I wanted to call my editor and tell her I gave it my best shot, and maybe this was not meant to be. We each have a choice: to listen to the voice that says we cannot do it, or to ignore the voice and do it anyway. And so I continued typing. I continued because there is a younger generation who want a better future for themselves and the generations after them. I believe my professional and personal experiences provide another point of view and vision for the future of the industry. I continue to write because there are communities that have been harmed and continue to be harmed. To be completely honest, as of the initial publishing of this book, I am the Director of Transportation and Drainage Operations for the City of Houston. I started this book well before submitting my resume for the position, and the book's focus is on my life and professional experiences prior to being in Houston. However, as I continued to complete drafts, I had internal conflicts between Veronica, the consultant slash advocate slash community journalist, who wants transportation leaders to be bold and to make hard decisions, and Veronica, the decision maker, who is balancing all the needs and demands of a city with a finite number of resources, and who, even more, frankly, wants to keep her job. I went from an observer to a decision maker. Whether in Houston or wherever my career takes me next, I kept envisioning an irate citizen holding up my book with highlighted quotes. But that is ultimately the point, correct? To be better and to be accountable to the public, particularly in communities that have repeatedly been negatively impacted by the transportation system. There are learning opportunities for us all, and we must be willing to show up and have an honest conversation. I hope this book will be a starting point for many of those. Introduction. Show me a transportation network, and I will tell you the values of the decision makers who designed it. In places I have visited, such as Antigua, Guatemala, and Brussels, Belgium, I have seen how very different parts of the world can have in common transportation networks that focus on people and on places to walk. Both of these cities have pedestrian-only streets, which allow for a vibrant atmosphere and the ability to people watch from an outdoor patio while sipping coffee. Where I grew up in Maplewood, New Jersey, a small suburban community outside of New York City, I was able to walk to school and playgrounds without adult supervision. During the one summer I had rollerblades, I was able to coast down the hill in the street without fear of being struck by someone driving. Even though these communities reflect different eras and cultures, they are all walkable places with human-scale design. All three of these communities were built before the invention of the automobile. Maplewood was originally constructed for people walking or using horses. Antigua, Guatemala has many of the original cobblestone streets, which make for an uncomfortable drive. As an adult living in Washington, D.C., I lived for 8 of the 15 years without a car, dependent on public transportation, walking, and biking. I lived in 3 areas of the city within walking distance of a metro rail station, which made getting to work and meeting up with friends relatively seamless. However, I did live in a part of the city that made me dependent on the bus system, which was designed to get people downtown during the workday, but made it impossible to get to church or even a grocery store on the weekend within my community. My travels have also taken me around the United States to communities designed around the automobile and communities destroyed by the automobile. Many cities and suburbs bleed together in my memory because they all have similar layouts. They have 8 to 10 lane roadways lined with strip malls and are hostile to anyone not traveling in a vehicle. Often, children are driven to school in large sport utility vehicles because it is not safe for them to walk or bike to school. People in the transportation industry play an important role in shaping communities and future generations. If you are an engineer, planner, community advocate, elected leader, or journalist, you are part of the transportation ecosystem. Some may even call it an echo chamber, making decisions and crafting narratives today that will impact where and how people will move in the future. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention developed a framework of factors that lead to positive health outcomes. Whether your community is walkable or is hostile to people who are not in a vehicle is a factor of the social determinants of health for people living in that community. A car-centric community is not a factor that leads to positive health outcomes. Unfortunately, we inherited a transportation network that reflects decades of decision-making by our predecessors, who ceded communities to motor vehicles. Communities where people could once walk, bike, and use public transit were divided, leveled, and reshaped to make way for the interstate highways and wide streets designed by our predecessors. Ideally, the transportation network would connect people to jobs, education, food, opportunities, and each other. But this has not actually been the case for decades. There is a lot to redo, and in some cases dismantle, and transportation projects can be expensive and take many years to implement. We have a choice of whether to continue to use the old tools of our predecessors, or to shift the paradigm, to right historical injustices by designing a network that is inclusive of all people, while also preparing for the future. We have an opportunity to shape our future. As the old saying goes, you cannot solve a problem with the same thinking that created it. This book aims to discuss the inequities related to our existing transportation network and how new projects are planned and built, and to examine what we can do to create a more equitable network. If you have heard people using the term equity and want to know more, this is a book for you. Even if your work does not directly involve transportation planning or implementation, I hope you take away from this book tools that will help you be more vocal about transportation projects that affect your community. Perhaps you will be inspired to attend a community meeting, complete a survey, write to an elected official, or author an opinion editorial for your local newspaper. If you are unable to move safely around your community without being in a motor vehicle, maybe you will advocate for safety improvements. If you are frustrated because lanes for vehicles are being reallocated to other uses, such as transit-only lanes and bike lanes, I hope you will gain some empathy for the people who rely on these modes for safe travel. If you understand the inequities and do not know what to do about them, I aim to help you navigate, reflect, and develop action steps. Every plan, design, and written policy gives you the ability to change an entire community with the stroke of a keyboard key or click of the mouse. Even when you make data-driven decisions, the data still reflect values and goals directed by the project's values and goals. As you listen to the chapters, you may have a specific project in mind where you want to do an inclusive community and stakeholder engagement process that truly guides the technical process. Or you may have had a project go awry and you want to do a post-mortem analysis to evaluate what went wrong and help you develop a clearer sense of what to do differently if you do it again. Perhaps, at the root, you believe there is a better way to plan, design, construct, operate, and maintain the transportation system. With new technologies and best practices in the world, you know we can plan and design a better transportation system for the future. You have this knowledge, but you do not know what to do with it. Whether you are a transportation professional or a journalist, you cannot forget the power of narratives and storytelling. Words have meaning. Beyond the plans, policies, and data, the story that is crafted by politicians, community members, project consultants, and so forth, influences the public. Although it may take more time than the standard approach, it is critically important to communicate and explain the process so that all members of the community can access the information. There is also a need to interrogate community concerns and discern which ones can be addressed and which ones are red herrings raised to protect or amplify the interests of a small subset, but not the community as a whole. This is a skill, and it is largely still not taught to people preparing to be professional engineers or planners. We need to change that. It is fundamental to creating better, more inclusive transportation networks and repairing divided communities. Today's discussions of equity prompt a lot of different reactions. Thank you for wanting to learn more, though I acknowledge you may be here begrudgingly, skeptically, or with genuine interest. In Chapter 2, I provide definitions and frameworks for equity. This chapter will give you a base understanding. Throughout the following chapters, there will be opportunities and questions for reflection to help you unpack the term and how it shows up in your work. I hope this book feels like a conversation, and I've tried to layer in the understanding of multiple viewpoints from my experiences in the transportation industry and the different communities I have visited or been a consultant in. Technology will not save us. Transportation technology is changing faster now than it has for previous generations. Many of the technologies from previous generations centered on the transportation mode itself, such as the automobile, which has evolved into a machine that can go over 100 miles per hour and be powered by electricity. Recent technologies have assisted with eliminating ownership or shifting the trip to someone else. From a smartphone that fits in the palm of our hand, we can order a ride or even have food, medicine, or alcohol delivered to our doorstep. We can unlock a scooter or unlock a shared vehicle. Even the humble bicycle has transformed into a shared public asset that one can access via the scan of a code. Car companies are racing to deliver vehicles that can operate without a driver. Technology companies are leading the way into the future with some innovative ideas, such as autonomous shuttles that move around college campuses, and even autonomous food delivery to provide access to groceries in communities that do not have a grocery store. However, two major flaws will hold them back from creating equitable transportation networks. One, the companies often lack diversity, which leads to a high-tech version of the inequitable transportation system we have today. This may not be intuitive for people. People may believe technology is the great equalizer for race and gender. However, technology is more a reflection of its designer's thoughts and lived experiences. When technology is mostly designed by men, the needs of women and children may not be considered. As an example, when technology is designed by people with lighter skin, the design tends to default to lighter skin tones. The technology fails to detect darker skin. A study from the Georgia Institute of Technology points out how the object detection used in autonomous technology has difficulty recognizing darker skin. This can lead to the possibility of self-driving cars being more likely to hit a black pedestrian. When technology is designed by a person with no disabilities, the final product often has to be customized to work for people with disabilities. For example, an autonomous vehicle company will say that driverless vehicles will help people with disabilities move around. But terms such as last-mile connection leave out people with disabilities when the last 100 feet can still be challenging. Second, tech companies lack an understanding of transportation. They are applauded and welcomed for disrupting the transportation industry. They will say they can do it faster than government. When there are no rules, it is easy to disrupt. However, once the dust of the disruption settles, communities are left questioning whether they want the technology or whether it has improved equity. Frequently, it has not. For example, the introduction of shared dockless bicycles and scooters may have improved economics for some cities. However, they created issues for people with disabilities, such as when users leave them in the middle of the sidewalk or a curb ramp, creating a tripping hazard or making a sidewalk impassable for someone in a wheelchair. The results have caused cities to create regulations, or in some cases, ban them altogether. Technology companies do not always care about unintended consequences. They care about their product, their investors, and their next fundraising series. The pressure to deliver can trump doing what is best for society. So while tech companies may tout their credentials for thinking creatively and differently, transportation networks are a public good that should serve all equally. And we should be wary of for-profit companies being the knight in shining armor for transportation reform. Regardless of changes in technology, we cannot lose sight of the fact that people still need to move safely, reliably, and, most important for equity, affordably. As communities continue to grow in population, congestion will get worse if the baseline assumption is that new residents will drive themselves in their own vehicle for every trip. Even with the promise that autonomous vehicles and connected vehicles, vehicles that can communicate with other vehicles and infrastructure, will improve traffic flow, it is still congestion, albeit moving more efficiently if each person is driving a vehicle alone.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?